Well, I guess I'm sort of a bit unofficial, a sort of worm's eye view of what went on. But the point is that I and Brian, and also John Clark, were Brian Pippard's research students in the Royal Society Mond Laboratory all at about the same time. I was a year ahead of Brian, so I think of him as a bit of a Lindy Junior. Shakespeare said, "There is a tide in the affairs of men which, taken at the flood, leads on to fortune." And I thought we might sort of group this around the tide in the affairs of physics. Brian did a very good job in taking that tide, but there were a few issues that made a difference, being the right man in the right place at the right time. You might go back to 1957, which was the year BCS came out, and it was also the year when Brown arrived in Cambridge from Cardiff High School to read maths here in Trinity College. And that's significant, because by the time we were all research students, BCS was settled. Everybody believed BCS. Enormous numbers of things had been calculated by BCS, and Bardeen was the great god of the time. And Brian came to read maths, and in the usual way at that time, I think probably still, bright mathematicians read maths part two in 2 years and then had to decide what to do next, and the great majority of them went on to maths part three. But Brian had concentrated on the applied side, I think chiefly because he was getting better marks in it, and came to the conclusion at the end of his second year that the mathematical approach to physics was a bit sterile, a bit out of touch with reality, and made a personal decision he was going to switch to physics. Now that seemed to me the first of these tide of fortune moments. I think if Brian had made the other choice, he would never have come anywhere near superconductivity and would no doubt have had a very distinguished career doing something else. Incidentally, he needn't have worried at all about his marks. I was in the same college as John Kingman, later Sir John Kingman, and running the Newton Institute here in Cambridge. And John was always very cross that Brian got better marks than he had in part two. Anyway, he made his switch to physics, and it was a successful year. And being a year ahead of him, we sort of knew he was coming. Because as an undergraduate, he published a paper on the Mossbauer effect, which wasn't quite the sort of thing undergraduates were expected to do. I remember reading in The New Scientist an account of what it was he'd done and trying to puzzle out what it was. And indeed, when part two was marked, Nicholas Curtie, I think, was the senior examiner from Oxford, and I remember him standing in the old Cavendish in a corridor, huddled with David Schoenberg, saying, "Who is this chap Josephson? He seems to be going through the theory like a knife through butter." So Brian duly arrived, and true to his colours, was determined to do an experimental PhD. That was why he was Brian Pippard's research student. So he had a project which was not too far away from my own. I was doing work on the surface impedance of superconductors, the microwave surface impedance. A little earlier, Paul Richards had been in the Mond as a postdoc, and Brian had got him to do something on the dependence of the penetration depth on magnetic field at a microwave frequency. The results hadn't worked out quite as Brown had expected. Brown Pippard had expected, and said that he thought it would be a good idea to do an experiment at a lower frequency. So Brown J was landed with the problem of setting up apparatus to work at 174 megahertz, which wasn't a frequency we were used to using in the lab, and designing apparatus which would apply the magnetic field, designing his apparatus, and worst of all, producing the samples, which, because they were low-frequency samples, were very complicated and difficult to manage and difficult to polish. So it was quite a task. And we have to remember that in the next 3 years, that was really what Brian was supposed to be doing. The Mond was an exciting time. David Schoenberg was sorting out the de Haspel-Alfvén effect. Joe Vinen had just measured checked that the circulation of superfluid in helium-4 was quantized, and of course Brian Pippard was a sort of lion of superconductivity. Also in 1960, that was the year that Dieva published his first results on tunneling with superconductivity, so that was rather timely. And of course it was exciting for us. We all by then knew about BCS, but here was this marvellous thing which showed you the BCS gap more or less directly. If you differentiated the current flowing through the tunnel junction, you not only saw the gap, you saw the BCS density of states beautifully plotted out. And Dieva had his own interpretation of it, which just said it was obvious it was going to show you the density of states, but those of us who knew a little bit about BCS theory thought it wasn't quite so obvious, because you had to worry about the BCS coherence factors, which Dieva wasn't too bothered about. Then in 1961-62, this is the second of the tide in the affairs of physics, Phil Anderson came to Cambridge for an extended sabbatical year and gave us a lecture course on all sorts of things, but amongst other things, talking about superconductivity and the nature of the order parameter in superconductivity. And to my mind, I mean, it was interesting to see what Brown says about this, but the fact that Phil was there and that Phil understood the nature of the order parameter, I suspect, was pretty crucial, because I don't think there was anyone else in Cambridge at that time who did. And Brown went to his lectures, talked incessantly to him, and very rapidly built up an interaction. And I think it was, he immediately, I think, went away and started to think about the implications of an order parameter that had phase, and that there was an uncertainty relation connecting the phase and number of particles. In February of 1962, a very important paper of Cohen, Falikoff and Phillips came out, and that's the third of my items. I think the timing was really rather important, from the University of Chicago. They were theoreticians, and they'd given a decent explanation of why Dieva's experiment had worked and why all the coherence factors cancelled out. The other very important thing was they tackled the tunnel junction by using the tunnel Hamiltonian, which we now all tend to assume is okay, but at the time was extremely controversial. Anyway, they did it, and the great point about that was that it provided a framework for a calculation which was actually relatively straightforward. In May 1962, as a side comment, Brown Pipard came to me and asked me to give a seminar. I was then in my third year as a research student, and I was expecting to have to give a seminar on what I'd been doing. But he asked me instead to give a seminar on tunnelling. So I had to go away and bone up on tunnelling, and read Cohen, Falikoff and Phillips, and did my best to give a decent seminar explaining what had happened to the coherence factors, and pointing out that there was a term in Cohen, Falikoff and Phillips that they'd thrown away because they'd said the phases would smear it out. And it would be nice to believe that the seminar I'd given had some effect on Brown Jay, who was sitting at the back, I remember, looking owlishly at me. But I don't think he did. I think he'd started considerably earlier. So that was just my little fantasy. He'd been busy doing the calculation, which I'm sure he's going to tell you about, so I won't say anything about that, except to say that I think what he was looking for was an effect in the normal tunneling, because we all believed at that time that it wasn't going to be possible to see superconductive tunnelling. So and he did indeed find an effect of the sort he was looking for, but was tightly taken aback to find another one, which is the one that we all worry about nowadays. And in June 62, his paper came out in the first issue of Physics Letters. At that point, I was somewhat distracted because I got married and went off on honeymoon. And today, being the 23rd of June, curiously, we're celebrating 50 years of Brown's achievement. I'm also celebrating my golden wedding today, and I'm here by my wife's permission. But I think while I was away, Brown, always wanting to be the experimentalist, set out himself to see whether he could find the Josephson effect. And they'd already worked out by that time that there would be quantum interference, so that it was going to be necessary to compensate the Earth's magnetic field, which they did. It didn't find it for reasons that became apparent a bit later. And then in July 1962, the great Bardeen published a rebuttal of Brian Josephson's arguments. And in September 1962, there was a confrontation, which became rather famous, at the LT8 conference, which was at Queen Mary College. Now, oddly, for some reason, very few Cambridge people went to that conference. We normally attended LT conferences quite rigorously, but perhaps because it was in Britain, nobody thought it was worth going. And in fact, I don't think Brian was planning to go either, except that the organisers thought that since these two views on tunnelling had been published, it would be nice to have a public discussion of them. So Brian took the train up to London, and it was all very gentlemanly. Bardeen, who was always a man of rather few words, explained gently why he thought Brian's results were wrong, and Brian stood up and explained very politely why he thought they were right. And I don't think that there was very much else said, but the contrast between age and experience and pretty extreme youth, I think, was what people noted. Somebody did defend Brian, and we think it was probably De Geyne, who certainly did know about the meaning of the order perimeter at that time. And then in January 1963, John Rowell showed that the effect was there, and he's going to tell us about that later, so I won't say anything more about that. The following year, we did all go to the LT conference, which that year was in Upper New York, in Colgate, and I think I travelled with Brian, and Brian always liked walking, and we knew that Upper New York was a place with lots of countryside, so Brian brought his walking kit, and he also brought his water bottle, and thinking he'd got a bit of spare weight in his luggage allowance, he filled it up with good Cam water, or possibly Welsh water, I'm not sure. And I remember him struggling to get this through the customs. did you succeed or not eventually?
I think so.
Yes, right. And then later on we did do a little walking, and I remember walking with him somewhere near Lake George and meeting under a large rock a very large rattlesnake, which was rattling away busily. In those days you could win a bounty. If you could bring the rattle back to a post office, they would give you a certain number of dollars. But I think we decided, perhaps wisely, to leave it alone. But what I also remember, of course, it was the moment when the Josephson effect was probably having its maximum impact. And everywhere we went, Brian was being lionized. Whether he was enjoying it or not, I'm not quite sure, but he had a large number of job offers and went off eventually to Illinois for a short time. I'm not quite sure of the dates, but at some point Brian was back in Cambridge and we gave a joint course on superconductivity. Brian decided that he'd better do the experimental part of it and I had to do the theory, which was no doubt good for us all. And I do remember that in preparing that theoretical part of the course, under instruction from Brian, that was the moment when I really did understand the order parameter properly. And then in 1973, of course, after a due gap, he was awarded his Nobel Prize, and knowing that Brian's tastes were fairly moderate in general, and there was a large amount of money involved, we asked him what he was going to do with the money. He thought for a little while and said he would probably buy a new bicycle, which he did. It was a very new
bicycle. Bike, so I've already got a new bicycle.
Well, I don't know which way round it was. It was a very beautiful bicycle, so I think that's the point to leave it to history.